and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That guy, that's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Did I get a little excited?
No, you were great. It's nothing. It was perfect.
Awesome.
Not at all. I was making sure I was okay.
That, so we're just going to keep moving forward. We've got
a great three hours of television. I knew you were going to say it.
Two weirdos can touch them. Oh, you all right? Let's go.
Here's what we're talking about this morning. Gronk finally responds to trash talker extraordinaire Jalen Ramsey. Landon Collins is calling out Dak Prescott, but we will start the show with Aaron Rodgers, who had the most heroic of Sunday nights last week, coming back from what we now know is a sprained knee to mount one of the most improbable but seemingly effortless comebacks of all comebacks in win over the rivaled Bears. Rodgers didn't practice yesterday as the team now prepares for their other arch rivals in the Minnesota Vikings. Still unsure whether he will play or not. Here he is yesterday talking about it.
I mean, I want to play, obviously, but just taking it one day at a time, see how it feels tomorrow and, see how it feels Friday, Saturday, and then hopefully ready to go Sunday.
All right, guys, there's a lot to get to in this one, whether he plays or not, who, what happens to this team if he doesn't play. If he does indeed play, let's move forward as if he is. What will be the key for him against this dominant Vikings defense?
He's going to have to be able to avoid the rush. The Vikings, and this is the constant theme it's been since Brett Favre took over with the Vikings. I was there. We game planned for him. The game plan, Mike Zimmer and the Vikings, this current regime, it's to get that quarterback. And do they have the staffing? Do they have the defensive players to be able to do that? Yes. The key to Aaron Rodgers is get the ball out of his hands. There's a couple things that Mike McCarthy and the staff would have to do for me to be comfortable with Aaron Rodgers playing. That would be, number one is they have to have a heavy concentration on we're going to either run the ball or we're going to throw the ball sideways or short that is going to help the running game. You have to have a tremendous screen game to be able to slow down the rush. And their defense, they got to be able to play good to keep the Vikings and keep the game close. Because if you become one-dimensional, if you back Aaron up 40 times against this rush, oh, he'll get hurt. He's still injured from the Sunday night game. So he's still sore. His mobility, this Vikings defense is not the Bears defense. And I would be willing to say if Khalil Mack had played, if he had been in training camp, Aaron, he wouldn't have made it through the second half because they could not block him. But when he got a little fatigued, that's when he started getting time. And I didn't like the Bears' game plan the second half. The Vikings, they will blitz him. To beat the Green Bay Packers, the philosophy for the Minnesota Vikings for 30 years, there is a practice tackling dummy at our facility. And there is a Green Bay quarterback's number on that. It was number 4. When he played there, and as soon as he retired, they put a number 12 on there. So when you listen to the Vikings, they are not going to say much about it. Last year, Barr knocked Rodgers out. But they know the path to victory is to hit that quarterback. They saw Monday's game, and they heard what Aaron Rodgers, when he talked trash last year, thought that it was an illegal
dirty hit.
Yep. He thought it was a dirty hit. And so you can believe that the Vikings, they believe that they could send a message, just like Aaron Rodgers thought he could send a message to the Bears that this is my division and I control it.
I'm not certain Rodgers is playing, and I know we're going to get to that, but to answer your question as far as if he is playing, here are names that matter. Lane Taylor, Corey Lindsey, Justin McCray. Those are the two guards in the center for the Green Bay Packers. Why do they matter? Because when Chris says the Vikings defense isn't the Bears defense, that's not a knock on the Bears defense, but the Vikings defense is better and it is built differently. The Bears were getting pressure on the edge. You had Khalil Mack, you had Leonard Williams, you have guys coming out from the edge. What the Vikings are going to do is up front, Hunter, Joseph, Sheldon Richardson, one of the enormous additions.
He came over from Seattle.
Right. He was maybe Seattle's best defensive lineman last year. They added that to their team. They added on their strength along with Everson Griffin. They can get strength right up the middle. Sheldon Richardson and Linval Joseph, most notably, two dominant defensive tackles. Mm-hmm. And so what the Packers did in the second half against Chicago was got the ball out quick, right? They got it out quick. They went no huddle. It's hard to get the ball out quick if your center's getting collapsed by Sheldon Richardson.
One thing you have to watch in the game, the skill set for the Vikings, too, over the Bears, the Vikings are one of the best tackling teams in the NFL. The Bears, they don't lose this game if they tackle. Those two big plays that they had, they were everything. That ball didn't travel that far. They ran with those balls. So if you can get those receivers on the ground, and the Vikings, that's what they've been very, very good at. They don't give up big plays. So it's going to be an intriguing matchup because the skill level of these players for the Vikings, they're dominant on the defensive front. They got dominant linebackers, and they have a great secondary.
Let me ask you guys this. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't play and DeShone Kizer goes in, we all agree they'll most likely lose this game to the Vikings. If Aaron Rodgers does go in up against this Vikings defense, there's a very good chance he can get hurt even more than he already is, and now that puts him out even further. If you're Mike McCarthy, what do you do?
I allowed him to come in the game. It was more of a chance him getting hurt in the Chicago game the second half than it would be him going out there healthy, because one reason is he's adjusted to the injury. He's got a half of football. He knows he can throw the ball on his right leg. So an athlete,
regardless of who the defense is?
The longer you're injured, though, the more you know what you can and can't do. He knows the Vikings defense is better, but he's going to be more familiar with his limitations and what he can do. That's why I think he would be a little more comfortable, because he's been with the injury for 7 days and would have made some adjustments.
But this is also where the Packers, and I do not think it's a stretch to call it, a level of organizational malpractice comes in. Because I get it that if Aaron Rodgers, if we found out he tore his ACL in week one, then their season's over. But they almost lost a game because he missed a quarter. We are going into this Vikings game saying, if he doesn't play, they may as well forfeit. So maybe you would put out a compromised Aaron Rodgers, because it's such a big game and you have no shot. For the fifth or sixth consecutive year, to have Aaron Rodgers' backup be just an empty jersey is ridiculous. Last year, Rodgers was out by the time it had been 6 weeks he was out, the Packers were 1-5 and their year was essentially over. They needed overtime wins against Cleveland and I think Chicago in order to just be mathematically alive for the playoffs. We saw a backup quarterback win a Super Bowl, a backup quarterback in Case Keenum take over in the second week of the year last year and take his team to 13-3. We saw the Patriots a couple years ago have a backup and a third-string quarterback win football games. For the Packers to go from Brett Hundley and then downgrade it backup to DeShone Kizer when you still don't have a running game, it's absolutely unfair to this guy. Because he has every player wants to play, and I know it's a rivalry game, but he doesn't have the luxury of saying, you know what, we have a softer schedule coming up, I want to get my knee right, and you know what, maybe they can win without me. He knows, like we know, if Kizer's the starter, they lose. And that's not the case for a lot of the other great players in this league. Drew Brees, if he's in this situation, he gets to say, you know what, I think Teddy can handle it for a week. You look around the league at the star quarterbacks, they can say, you know what, even Brady, I think Hoyer can handle it for a week.
Yep.
At least Rodgers a couple can't. Minutes the way Rodgers was out on Sunday.
A quarter. And so I put that on the Packers, that there's extra pressure on him to play because he knows who's backing him up.
And I think, Nick, that when you've seen your season end and when you see the game change the way when Aaron got hurt, I believe it can be demoralizing for the team. If Aaron's not there, we don't even have hope. So I'm concerned about Green Bay practice today. Aaron didn't practice yesterday. He was with the rehab guys off to the side doing a different workout. But if he doesn't practice, I know the players know if he's not in the game, it's a fake. Yesterday's practice couldn't have been good. It's hard to practice well when you don't have the guys that you're used to. So I wonder if the team, their whole philosophy, will they have the energy? Will they have the faith to believe if Aaron's not going to be there because the organization hadn't supported him? And in a normal situation like this, we would say, yeah, you know what? They're going to run the ball. We don't even believe that the Packers will run the ball.
I mean, in week one, they were third worst in the NFL running the football. They were fifth worst in the NFL on yards per carry. The only guy on the team that ran the ball effectively was Rodgers before the injury. He had one carry for 15 yards. It's the only reason they had a better than 3.2 yards per carry average. This is a game right now you can't bet on because they don't know. Vegas doesn't know if Rodgers is playing. But the Las Vegas Hilton Super Contest, they have to put their lines out Wednesday night for their big contest, their big gambling contest. Now, you can't make an individual bet on it, but those lines get locked in Wednesday night. They installed Minnesota as a 7-point favorite in Green Bay. So that contest says he's not playing. And that contest is saying the Packers are drawing dead if he doesn't play. That's about management. Cost $3 million to get yourself. What is Ryan Fitzpatrick just put up 48, didn't he?
That's true.
Yeah. Like, there are competent backups available. Instead, the Packers backup is a guy who literally has never won a game in this league, despite this being his second year in the league last year as a starter.
I know this might not mean anything, but because Aaron said it after the game, part of the reason that he learned how to be tough as a quarterback was by watching Brett Favre. Brett Favre would be playing.
Yes.
Brett Favre would be in that game. Wouldn't be no coach or doesn't. Brett Favre would be playing. So I would be leaning towards Aaron Rodgers will be there Sunday at 1 o'clock.
I hope he is, because it could be the best game of the week. It should be the best game of the week if Rodgers is out there.
All right, Aaron Rodgers listed as day-to-day as the Packers get ready for the Minnesota Vikings. Coming up, Gronk responds to Jalen Ramsey's trash talk. Hear from him next on First Things First.
It's week two of the football season, which means a second shot at victory, bragging rights, and huge cash prizes are up for grabs all season long at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. This weekend, DraftKings has over $2 million in total prizes, and you can play free with your first deposit to compete for your share. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft the new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So, if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now. Use code FIRST, spell it out now, F-I-R-S-T, to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $2 million in total prizes. That's code FIRST, only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Big game this weekend, Patriots at Jaguars. Both teams off to a great start after winning in week one. Not only an AFC Championship rematch, but the highly anticipated meeting between big talker Jalen Ramsey and big dude Rob Gronkowski. Remember, the All-Pro Ramsey said that anytime Gronk has been matched up with a corner, he's had a very bad game and that corner has had a very good game. Well, Gronk was asked about those comments yesterday.
That's how he feels. That's how he feels. I mean, it's a big game this Sunday. We're playing them. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to have opportunities to go versus him. I'm sure he's going to have opportunities to go versus me. So I'm just preparing like I always prepare. I got to just do my job out on the field and just worry about that. There can always be talking, going back and forth, tempers getting heated up and everything. You just got to keep your cool. And, I mean, I don't see any benefit to get a 15-yard penalty out on the field because you lose your cool. And so you just got to keep your cool and keep your head on straight.
That is a product of the Bill Belichick school of answering questions. Good tutelage there. Nick, how should the Jags try to slow down Rob Gronkowski in this one?
Listen, I understand the pitfalls to having a corner match up on a tight end, especially this tight end. Gronk's, all tight ends are bigger than corners. Gronk's the biggest, strongest tight end probably in the league. So you're going to be at a deficit if they run the football. You're also, maybe most notably, kind of giving away your coverage to Brady.
Yes.
You're letting him know.
You're dictating a lot of information if you decide to have Jalen travel with Gronk. You're kind of at the mercy of the court because Brady can go to all these other matchups and he can get one of your linebackers matched up with one of his running backs, or the way he did in last year's AFC championship game, he targeted the other wide receivers. Brandon Cooks, 100 yards. Amendola, close to 100 yards. They had good games against the Jags.
And Gronk played almost the entire of that first half before people remember he was knocked out. But he wasn't knocked out in the first quarter. He was knocked out at the very end of the second quarter. So I understand there's possible pitfalls. What do you do with your strong safety if your corner's on the tight end? I get it. But there's also an element of Jalen been talking a lot. Jalen talked a lot before the season about that Giants game. Odell kicked his butt in that matchup. Oh, he was he didn't talk bad about Odell, but he talked bad about Eli, and Odell dominated that matchup. Now, the Jags won, but it wasn't due to what Jalen right. did. He talked bad about Gronk. You went up against, I think, the best wide receiver. Now you're going up against the best tight end. Go see what you can do. Go see. I want to see if Jalen Ramsey can take Gronk out of the game, because they don't have Amendola now. They don't have Cooks now. They don't have Deion Lewis coming out of the backfield. They don't have Edelman. And if they don't even have Jeremy Hill anymore. He got hurt in week one. Like, if they take Gronk away, the Texans would have beat the Pats as poorly as they played if they took Gronk away. Gronk dominated that football game. I know you can't put him on the entire game, but I do want to see. And if I'm the Jags, I do put Jalen on Gronk for large chunks of this football game.
Yeah, I expect about 20 to 30 snaps, Nick. And you're right. The integrity of the defense can be altered by moving a corner from outside and moving him into the box. Well, people say, well, why is that? Because if Gronk lines up at a customary NFL tight end position, you don't want your corner 3 or 4 yards off of him playing a man-to-man. Because you've also, what do you do with your strong safety who's supposed to be on that side? What do you do with your Sam linebacker? Your Sam linebacker, if you put him on the end of the line of scrimmage, you tell Tom Brady, he's blitzing. So now Tom can take his time, alter the pass pattern, and get the type of matchup. Mangini always talks about with Tom Brady, what do you have to do? You have to diversify your coverages, and you have to give him as little information before the snap as possible. And if you line Jalen up and you say he's going to guard him, travel with him the whole game, no, it's not in their best interest. But for 20 or 30 snaps, Jalen's got to be able to put his money where his mouth is. He's talked about it in the GQ article. He's that type of player. Jacksonville has allowed him to do it before. But Jacksonville, I thought, in the championship game, had a good game plan. Sometime he's going to guard Gronk. So they couldn't predict, so they couldn't get him booked, and then potentially be able to create big plays off of that. But you put your team in the best position to win when Jalen Ramsey is guarding the best receiver. All right? And that's what Jacksonville has done. They've been successful at it. So I expect to see some parts of that during this game on Saturday, Sunday.
If those two negate each other, how do the rest of the two teams match up?
Well, I think that this is, if you take Gronk out of the game, I think the Pats are going to struggle to score a lot of points. Now, against Jacksonville, they might not need to score a lot of points. But I think if Jalen negates, you talked about how when you went up against a great corner, you just tried to play him to a draw.
Yes,
right?
Stalemate, yes.
If it's just a stalemate and if Gronk is limited, then I believe the Pats are going to struggle to get to 24 points in this football game. Now, maybe they only need 17 to beat Jacksonville because of Jacksonville's limited offense, but I think that would be a huge win for the Jags if he can play into a stalemate.
Jacksonville's got to do like the Texans did last week. You got to get New England in a lot of third and long, third and seven or more. Last week, you would see New England in the game. They had a higher number of those because they shut them down on first and second down. Now, if you're able to do that, you make them predictable. In last week's game against the Texans, New England did not convert a third and plus seven. I think they were 0 for 6. So in doing that, Brady has to hold the ball longer for guys to get down the field. So that should be the game plan for Jacksonville. Be really strong on first and second down. Force Tom to throw the ball. And then you can have Jalen on him sometime, but then you can have right. Jalen at his traditional corner position to the right side of the offense.
Listen, if you look at last year's stats from as far as Gronk, when he was matched up against a linebacker, generated a 154 passer rating when thrown to him, 28 targets. Lined up against a safety, a 107 passer rating on 75 targets. Lined up against a corner, this is what Jalen's talking about, a 51 rating. Like, oh, corners do shut him down. The more noteworthy number there, it's just 15 targets. So what that tells me is what you're saying, C, when he has a corner on him, mm-hmm. they're going somewhere else with the football. Like,
yes.
There's only 15 targets all season with a corner on Gronk. That means that's when they are then throwing it to another wide receiver or to a running back.
So isn't that the matchup then that Brady would want?
That's the matchup where Brady would want, but the numbers indicate that if he has an elite corner on him, he's going to go other places. But why would the quarterback rating be so different from a linebacker? to from a safety corner linebacker. And the reason, because the corner, they're a lot quicker. So there's less space. Gronk does not have Amendola, Edelman. He don't have that. He's big and strong. And the further the ball goes down the field, it's like Randy Moss. The further you go down the field, the more advantage the wide receiver has. Gronk is a big, strong, lumbering guy. And has great hands. But you get him 20 yards down the field, huge advantage to Gronk, huge advantage to Brady, huge advantage to the Pats.
Stuff. All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, which All-Pro just dissed Dak Prescott? The answer next on First Things First. All right, time to go viral now. Even though the New York Giants came up short in week one against Jacksonville, Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham showed off the skills. Saquon even scored the first touchdown of his career, leading to this hilarious moment in the locker room. Take a listen.
Saquon Barkley's first touchdown ball.
Odell was playing like he's going to keep it. That is, do you have, did you keep your touchdown? Yeah, 131 of them. I get it. It'd be a big room. But do you have any particular ones that?
Your first, maybe?
I do have them, but do I have them out on display and everything? No, I don't. I have them all in one certain spot. And actually, I'm going to give them all to my daughter. My daughter wants all my stuff that I kept, all my jerseys, all of my Hall of Fame. She made sure, hey, you got a wheel. I need to make sure all that stuff goes to me. Because your son, Deron, he don't care nothing about that stuff. I need to make sure that I get it handled. I was like, I got you, Monterey. It's like, awesome. Make sure you sign a piece of paper so I get it. So, yeah, we do have those things. Yes.
Emmett
Very important.
Emmett famously kept every single one of them. He'd go put it in the cooler after he scored, and he scored a bunch. But when you said all the balls, you didn't keep all 131, or you did?
No.
Just...
No.
Okay.
The special ones.
The special ones.
All right, very cool.
Yeah.
And by the way, happy belated birthday to Monterey from last week. You were off the show, I think, the day of her birthday. So happy birthday to her.
Good stuff. All right. Time now for some stories to start your morning. Guess what, guys? The Nathan Peterman era is over. Again. For now. Bills announced that rookie Josh Allen will start Sunday against the Chargers. All right, Nick, break it down. Was this the right move by Buffalo?
I don't think it was. I think you're the only investment that matters right now in Buffalo, maybe in the whole city, but certainly with the organization, is Josh Allen. It's your 7th overall pick. Your offensive line's a mess. The Chargers, contrary to what you saw last week, do have a good defense, and you're throwing him out there way before he's ready. So, I don't think it's the right decision, even though Peterman is obviously not a starting quarterback.
The reason why it's the right decision is because you want the team to continue to practice hard. And the best chance for them to win this week is not Peterman. If you put him in there, you know what you're telling the rest of the team? We're not trying to win, all right? This guy's played awful. He's the last few starts, they've been bad. Put the kid in there. At least you keep the enthusiasm of the team practicing as if we're trying to win. It's the best decision for this week. You cannot play as bad as he did last week and expect to be a starting positional player, regardless, quarterback or any other position. No one would be playing after playing that bad.
It does make me wonder if they already regret trading A.J. McCarron. I know they got a 5th-round pick for him, but then you could move on from Peterman and not put Josh Allen in jeopardy.
It's all bad. They're all bad decisions.
It's all bad options.
I guess I go back to Doug Flutie.
Buffalo Mafia, get drunk before the game. Yeah. Don't need it.
They probably already are. One note for Josh Allen here, positive note. He might not have to deal with Chargers defensive end Joey Bosa. The Pro Bowler is week to week with that foot injury. See, how big of a loss is Bosa for this Chargers defense?
Huge loss. He's one of the best pressure guys from the outside. Great young football player. I'm concerned about this injury. He's looking at getting a second opinion.
Man.
He's a big, explosive guy. He plays on the edge. And a lot of times, you put a lot of pressure on your feet because typically you're always on one leg. And it becomes very, very important that your feet for a defensive lineman compared to a defensive tackle. All right? I'm concerned about this injury.
He was my pick for Defensive Player of the Year.
So this is obviously
an enormous loss. I'm concerned as well because of the day it happened, they thought it was a significant injury. The next day we hear avoided significant injury, should be back at practice soon. That was 3 weeks ago. So, like, the fact that they don't seem to have this right, and not to play doctor, but you have so many tiny bones in your feet. This is a part of your body that does get misdiagnosed at times. In the NBA, you hear about the Jones fracture and what a problem that is. This concerns me greatly.
And also, the poorest circulation on your body is in your feet. It's the hardest to heal. It's the furthest away from your heart. So, very, very difficult a lot of times when you're dealing with the feet.
Also, he's gigantic. Oh, and that's
so he's
lot of
further away. Further.
And that's further away.
That's a good point, Jenna.
Yeah, what you got to do, you got to lay down, elevate your feet. Okay. That's how you get the blood flow.
Got it.
Moving on to Thursday Night Football. Tonight on the NFL Network, Ravens-Bengals. Cincy topped the Colts in week one, and Joe Flacco in Baltimore put up 47 on Buffalo. See, what are you looking for in this matchup?
This is a good matchup right here. I like it. Divisional games. Teams don't like each other. Now, we tend to forget how hated this little rivalry is in the AFC North, but Joe Flacco, what is he going to be this year? They had a very good preseason under the radar. I believe that the pressure on him for Lamar Jackson, him potentially being in the lineup, has made Joe Flacco. When did Joe Flacco have his best year? When he was playing for his contract. Mm-hmm. Joe Flacco's playing for his job. We should see the best of Joe Flacco this year.
And we saw the best that we'd seen of him in quite some time in week one already this year, connecting with wide receivers at a rate he hadn't. I talked to Ravens safety Tony Jefferson a couple days ago. This team, I asked him, are you guys over yet how your season ended? If people don't remember, the Ravens were in the playoffs with 30 seconds left in the regular season. And what happened? Andy Dalton knocked them out of the playoffs on New Year's Eve. That's how Buffalo went. So they said they've been waiting for this game all offseason. After the week one performance, they're not going to have a letdown because of who knocked them out last year. So I'm excited for the game tonight.
All right, let's finish in the NBA. Big news for former MVP Russell Westbrook. He underwent arthroscopic surgery on his right knee. Most likely will miss the entire preseason. Could miss OKC's first few regular season games. Nick, break it down a little. Put it in perspective. How big of a deal is this for Russ now?
This is incredibly concerning to me. Not because he's going to miss time. I don't care about that. This is his fourth surgery on his right knee. Russ was a guy who famously never missed a game in junior high, in high school, in college, in his first few years in the NBA. And then in game one of the Western Conference playoffs a few years ago, they're playing the Rockets. They call timeout. And Patrick Beverly tries to steal the ball from him and runs into his leg. They were the one seed at the time. He ends up being knocked out there. Since then, he's had four procedures on that same knee. And the fact that we saw Russ in highlights, right? Just the other night.
Yeah.
Where we saw him
gym.
On the show in the gym. I forgot who he drove by.
CJ.
Drove by CJ McCollum. Good recall, Jenna. Thank you. And the fact that he's having this now says something went wrong. Russ turns 30 this year. There is not a player in the league more reliant on explosive athleticism. There's not a player in the league that I think's game will age worse than Russ's. And he just has to hold off aging because he's not a great shooter. He's not super efficient. He is just a super freak athlete. So when I saw this news, this is one of my favorite players. It's really concerning because if he even loses 10% of that fast twitch, then he is a totally different guy on a super max contract.
I'm concerned about the injury, and Nikki, you and I talked about it. It's a big point that you're making as far as we saw him practicing where he was almost a fool. I mean, he made an unbelievable step through move and dunked on a bunch of people in the lane. Now, that was with the knee. So what's been happening as he gets ready for the season, because we're too close to the season, there's only two things could have happened. That the knee was injured. He's already had three surgeries on it. And he thought that the rest and some rehab would heal the knee. Obviously, it didn't. Or he re-injured it recently while he was playing. Those are the two things. Now, the way I can take away some of your concern is if Russ does this. If OKC, if they allow him to take his time coming back, don't rush him back, allow him to miss some games or whatever he needs to till he's healthy. Because trying to play on that gimpy knee and then trying to make it to May playing basketball late into the playoffs, those two things I don't believe go together. And they do have a competent guard that they can play. They got
Schroeder in the Melo trade.
They got him.
Yeah.
He is a NBA starting point guard. Russ, don't rush yourself back. And this is going to be the most critical time for Russ's career. It wasn't when KD and them left. He went on to win the MVP. So, because he's already done that. Mm-hmm. The most important now was, how does he grow his game? Does he increase his jump shot? Does he make his jump shot get better? Does he start to learn like the other elite athletes? He's the best athlete in the NBA.
Yes.
That's why his knees are going to affect him. But the other great athletes that we've seen, other great players that were great athletes, they adjusted at 30. Yeah. They got a little post-up game. They didn't play the game as just
angry,
chaotic.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't have to play as hard as Russ plays. So it's up to OKC, because you know the athlete. The athlete's going to want to go. But you got to be able to help him out by putting the other guard in there and have Russ take some time to heal.
See, it's a great point you bring up that they actually have a backup point guard this year in Schroeder. They didn't last year. It was an underrated part of the offseason. We all thought they were just going to have to give Melo away. Atlanta wanted to get off Schroeder's money, so they brought him in. But Russ, whether he becomes a better shooter or not, the thing that I admire so much about his game is what he's going to have to tamper down. He has the Kevin Garnett in him, which is, you watch film of Russ, you do not know if it is Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals or if it is February 3rd. Mm-hmm. And like that is inspiring, but it's not smart once you get on the other side of 30. You've got to be able to have different gears. He never has. I hope they give him the time as well to rehab for this fully.
All right, let's move back on to a little football now. All right, guys. Let's talk facts. The Dallas Cowboys lost to the Carolina Panthers last week. Fact. The Dallas Cowboys have a less than stellar receiving core and a hobbled offensive line. Fact. So Dak Prescott, good or bad, that is still up for grabs. Unless you're Landon Collins, the Giants safety whose team faces the Cowboys Sunday night. Collins says the key to stopping Dallas is to make their quarterback beat you.
He's really got to focus on stopping Zeke, making sure that every run gap, every we plan out gap assignments, making sure we close the air out of their offensive running game. If we do that, put the ball into Dak hands, I mean, I think we have a better shot at winning.
A little bit of an insult there, a little bit. CC, is Landon Collins right?
No players want to be criticized. Guys always get bent out of shape and criticized, but it's a difference in criticizing someone and critiquing someone's game. One time in Philadelphia, when I was playing there, Randall Cunningham, we played the L.A. Rams in the playoffs. The Rams beat us in the playoffs. After the game, the coaches and the players, all of them said, "Well, yeah, we were going to make Randall Cunningham throw the ball to beat us." Now, early in Randall Cunningham's career, we know a great runner, great athlete and everything, not the pocket passer. He said the same thing that Landon Collins said. And we all got upset. Oh, man, they bad-mouthed Randall and everything. It was true.
But did you know it at the time? Did you know at the time it was true?
We knew it. We just didn't want to admit it.
Okay.
But they wanted him because he was more of a threat running the ball or the other things. Like, they felt like their chance. They rushed 3, and when they wanted to put pressure on us, they rushed 4. And they dropped 7. They had all those eyes looking back at him. And, man, our offense was awful. And we played awful, and our season was over with. So the truth of the matter is, yeah, Dallas is not as good when Dak's throwing the ball. That's the truth. This is the opposition. This is 2 and some odd training camp, almost 2.5 years of evidence. This is not Jerry Jones talking about his quarterback. This is what the NFL thinks about him. And that's what Dak is going to have to do week in and week out, prove to people, because this is the book on Dak. That first year, Nick, I told you, hey, man, they better get to the Super Bowl. They better try to win the Super Bowl in this first year.
You said it was going to be their best chance. They got home field. They were super healthy. Zeke was – not that Zeke wasn't going to be able to maintain that level, but it was going to be hard for him ever to be better. And you said Dak might never be as good as he is right now. And I thought it was crazy. I thought he was the guy that if you redrafted, goes number one overall, league MVP, because of how great he was his rookie year. And you were on it. We were.
And that was the closest they came in the last
Well, thus far,
years.
I mean, by far.
And one of the reasons why, they didn't have a book on him yet. The NFL didn't know what he was. We were guessing. Dallas didn't even know. The reason why, no, because you would have drafted him higher. You wouldn't have had all those teams get a chance on him. So the truth of the matter is, the league's got a book on Dak. It's Dak's job now. It's no different than when I got cut by Buddy Ryan. All you do is score a touchdown. The league had a book on me. You got to be able to change your book, and that's what they have to do with their passing game. And until they do that, you're going to hear more interviews coming out week after week. What do you have to do? We're going to stop them from running. We're going to put the ball in the quarterback's hand and see if he can beat us.
All right, so, and the book on Dallas how Carolina played and how effective they were, that is going to put even more pressure on Dak. What do I mean? What I mean is this. Dak's rookie year, the Cowboys faced a loaded box, an extra man in the box, 36% of the time. Slightly below league average. Their league average about 38%.
They didn't believe Zeke and them were for real.
Correct. Last year it was at 40%. Now keep in mind Zeke was out for six of those games. Week one against Carolina, 53% of the snaps, they had an extra man in the box. What they were saying, Carolina was almost outwardly insulting the Cowboys passing attack pre-snap. We don't think you can beat us through the air. We are going to show you more than one out of two times. We're going to have guys in single, man-to-man, dare you to beat us.
They were right.
And they were right. The Cowboys didn't cross midfield until after halftime. They scored 8 points in the game. So, like, why would anyone change that? Why would anyone until we see Dak all of a sudden? Because, and one of the reasons I was so high on him wasn't just his rookie year. The playoff loss. The game against Green Bay in the postseason when he had to throw the football. He was effective. Like, Rodgers ended up out-dueling him, but that was, if you guys remember that game, it was long field goal at the gun. Like, that was a back-and-forth battle between, I thought, the best quarterback in the league and Rodgers and one of the next guys.
Who was he throwing to, Nick?
What? Well, that's the other thing.
Oh, that guy's on TV, and the other guy's on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah,
and Dez had a big game that playoff game. And Witten's a reliable, even though Witten just runs a 6.8 40, like his little button hook on third and four was an effective play. And so I don't, if I'm the Giants, I do exactly, even though I don't have the same personnel, I do exactly what Carolina did. And I say, well, I actually think the Giants' secondary is better than Carolina's. Now, I don't think the Giants' front is anywhere close to as good as Carolina's.
Linebackers.
But their secondary is better. So, yeah, I mean, what Landon Collins is saying is absolutely right. And this is a, by the way, there's no must wins. I get it in week two. Both these teams are 0-1. Philly and Washington are 1-0. We know how deep the NFC is. Like, this is a huge game for these two teams.
Man, what do the numbers say? Forget about what they think about.
If you start 0-2, you miss the playoffs 90% of the time.
90% of the time.
This is a huge week in the league. No one wants to start at 0-2. We saw the Saints. They started out at last year. They were able to dig out, but it's rare. 90%? I'm banking on those numbers.
And I think the Saints were the only team in the league last year that started 0-2 and ended up making the postseason.
The only thing Dak does have going for him is last week you said if there was a team that was going to really slow down Zeke, it was going to be the Panthers. This week against the Giants, he'll be able to rely a little bit more on Ezekiel Elliott.
Absolutely, but I mean, if they're going to put 8 men in the box the whole game, then he's going to have to make some throws.
Right.
You're going to have at least one play greater than 20 yards. Going to have at least one. They didn't have one last
Football's week. A simple game. There's 11 on defense. We're going to put 8 in that box. They can only play 2 coverages. Number one coverage is man, cover 1, safety in the middle. Another coverage they can play, cover 3, where they play zone. But that strong safety in the box, out of the box, is telling you exactly what we're going to give you. And if you can't defeat that coverage, that's the easiest coverage in the NFL.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, wait till you hear who thinks Baker Mayfield will be better than Drew Brees. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings.
Good morning. Good.
How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing great.
All right, let's talk a little Saints and Browns. New Orleans will host Cleveland Sunday. Drew Brees will start for the Saints. Baker Mayfield will not start for the Browns. Tyrod Taylor gets that nod again despite a shaky start last week. Regardless, Drew Brees had some insane praise for the number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield. Take a listen.
I think he can be a lot better than me. Man, he's got all the tools, you know. He's more athletic. He probably can run around better. He's got a stronger arm, you know. He's got all the tools. Listen, I'll give Baker Mayfield advice if he asks for it. Other than that, I'm just focusing on my job.
Drew Brees basically saying Baker is going to be a better version of Drew Brees in years to come. See, what do you make of that?
Now, Drew Brees he's literally one of the faces of the NFL. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and just not because of his quarterback play, but the type of man he is. Former Walter Payton Award winner as far as his charitable stuff that he does off the field. It's been well noted, but Drew's a good man. He's a great leader. He's one of the greatest leaders we have. But even Drew can be wrong in doing this. I remember when when Larry Fitzgerald was coming into the league. And everyone knows I've been knowing Larry since he was 13, 14. People ask, well, how good Larry going to be? I could have easily said, Larry's going to be better than me. But I know better. I know how high that bar would be, and I wouldn't say that to Larry to put that pressure on him. Drew Brees, you can argue he's the greatest passer that we've ever seen. Now, you can say Aaron Rodgers got more talent, but he ain't got the numbers that Drew Brees has. You're talking about completion percentage. You're talking about touchdown to ratio. You're talking about yards. All these things. Drew Brees is amazing. Now, just because the packages are wrapped the same, and I do believe that him and Baker have some of the same intangibles. But, man, I need to pick out another smaller guy. I believe he can be as good as Russell Wilson. All right? Like, I just can't. Drew Breesy, man, is in a he's in a special, special class. He's one of the best 10 quarterbacks we've ever had all times. He's that good. I got that much respect for him, and he's that kind of leader. What's Baker's body going to be like when he's 35? Drew Brees is a workout warrior. He takes care of his body. We don't know those things. But Drew's a nice guy, and I like what he's saying. Baker does have a chance. But Drew Brees, we need to pick someone else. Like, because Drew Brees, it's just, it's not fair. I was there when Aaron Rodgers took over. I asked Greg, what about Aaron Rodgers? He said, man, he's going to be special. He didn't say he's going to be better than Brett Favre, though.
Sometimes you just don't know. But I don't mind Drew Brees saying this. I don't read anywhere deep into it, though. It means nothing to me because Baker Mayfield has a lot to prove. Forget trying to be better than Drew Brees. Just trying to start a game and take that Cleveland Browns team where they desire to go. What something that Drew Brees did when he got to New Orleans, a team that they were the Cleveland Browns at the time.
It's a great
point. And he revitalized that organization. So when I look at that, just doing that, the way New Orleans is, they're a contender every single year because of Drew Brees. That is a huge order to stand next to. And so for again, I don't mind Drew Brees saying it, and I think with him saying it, it's kind of like, he can be better than me. Does he really believe it? I don't know.
Well, listen, a month from today, assuming Brees plays every game, going up to a month from today, Drew Brees will be his rankings in NFL history. First in completions, first in completion percentage, first in yards, second in touchdowns. That's where he'll be a month from today.
Man, before Drew Brees came to New Orleans, he wouldn't have believed he was going to be Drew
Brees. Right. Well,
you know who Baker Mayfield needs to be worried about being better than?
Tyrod Taylor.
How about Sam Darnold? Because he's going to get the job over Tyrod at some point. Mm-hmm. But they took him over Darnold. And Darnold, and we haven't seen Rosen yet, Lamar, Josh Allen, the whole crew. But Darnold's the only one to have played. Because Baker can turn out to have a great career. You always are compared to the other quarterbacks you're drafted against, you're drafted with. Like, and so there is that element to it. Like, that's a thing Jared Goff has to deal with as well once Carson comes back. Because they could have taken Carson one. They took Jared Goff one. So, until mm-hmm. you have that level of success, you're always going to be compared to the guy that your team could have taken.
You know what I get? I know what Drew Brees was alluding to. He was talking about the pregame speeches.
Oh, yeah, no, they are.
He was talking about the
because no, when I see. He sees some of that.
Absolutely. When I think that has to be what he's talking about because Baker Mayfield, Drew Brees, very passionate, both have a swagger about them to where their level of play can promote them giving that type of speech to a team at the quarterback position, which you know is, you look at a quarterback. I was down in Miami, and Ryan Tannehill would try to give those speeches, those pregame speeches. And when your level of play doesn't really meet that speech quality that you need, it's kind of in one ear and out the other.
I think that's what Dirk Cutter was talking about when they put Fitzy in there and he got the results compared to Jameis Winston. We've seen some of Jameis's pregame speeches, so I think that speaks to what you're talking about, Greg.
So I was going to ask you about that. I was going to say, well, when you look at a guy like Baker Mayfield, what is it besides the passion, obviously, for the game and the passion to start this career? I mean, I haven't seen a kid come out of college in so many years who wants so desperately to really just play football. What is it in his game that you see that Brees could be talking
about? It's the size. It's the reason he's talking about it is the size. Is Brees was, you mentioned Doug Flutie earlier when we were joking about the Bills. Prior to Brees, Flutie was the comp as far as, like, what's the peak, what's the ceiling in a modern NFL for an undersized quarterback. Breeze changed that. Vic changed it a little bit, but he had such a different game.
Russell Wilson.
And then Russell Wilson came after. Like, it is because they are, I mean, they are the two shortest starting quarterbacks once Baker becomes a starter in the NFL right
now. I think from a football standpoint, Drew Brees has also looked into the information, because also, let's not forget, New Orleans was looking for a quarterback to transition. So they did a lot of studying on this group of quarterbacks coming out. Because potentially they could have drafted one if one would have slipped to them. But I think it's about this. Drew Brees, what is he great at? Accuracy. And also, Drew Brees is just as accurate getting off the number one going to 2, 3, and 4. That's the way Brady and Rodgers are. That's the way Baker Mayfield was in college. He's so accurate with the football. And he's also a smaller guy who knows how to throw the football with his body. Russell has it straight over the top. Drew Brees has it right here straight over the top. And Baker has that same type of throwing motion. They utilize their whole body, and they're very, very accurate. The difference in Drew Brees and who Baker Mayfield is, what part of this journey is he going to meet Sean Payton? Because Sean Payton is a game changer now. Sean Payton devised all that offense and everything. Last year, people, Drew Brees played great. Broke the NFL record, 72% completion. He threw the ball a lot less because Sean Payton decided to run the ball. So Sean's ability to be creative and with the personnel and the people that they've drafted has allowed Drew Brees to go into the upper echelon of all the quarterbacks. Man, 99% of all of us, we need help. And Drew Brees got help. I remember Drew Brees going off the field with his shoulder like this, locked up. That's what I remember. Then he went to New Orleans. They made the investment in him. And Sean Payton and Drew Brees walked this thing out together. When is Baker Mayfield going to get that? That's something we don't have the answer to right now, Greg.
It is. And I go back to what you said, Nick. It's the size. Like, it's clearly the size that makes Drew Brees even mention this. I don't really see their throwing. The accuracy of Drew Brees, he's so accurate. He's so great.
He's the most accurate quarterback in history.
The stats don't lie. Like, we talk about accurate quarterbacks. We think of Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. Like, it's Drew Brees, and he throws probably
more than anybody.
Exactly. Absolutely. So for him to be this accurate, it's a tall order for Baker Mayfield. But
no pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended.
There you
well
go.
Done.
Way to explain it.
No problem.
He was going to get there. No. Greg, stick around. We got so much more coming up. We hear from Aaron Rodgers on his status against the Minnesota Vikings. That's next on First Things First. Here with Greg Jennings, and we are going viral. This week, Kirk Cousins and the Vikings will face the Packers. Check out this poster from a young Vikings fan from this past Sunday. Hey, Fox, they say that two wrongs don't make a right, but two Packer fans made me. How awesome is that?
That's awesome.
That is pretty good is right there.
Gina, are you okay with the fact that the little boy knows how he got there?
What does that mean?
Well, oh, man. What do you think the sign means, Jenna?
Two consummated fans. You know, I get
right,
that.
So that's what he's saying. He's a little young.
He's saying, I understand.
Yeah, he's saying, I get it.
Yeah, I get it.
You're okay?
I get it. Yes.
You've had the conversation with your girls?
That is not what happened.
That is not what happened. That's not
about
business.
We have not had that
Should
yet.
Should we go further?
No.
I mean, this is a strong Vikings fan.
If Chris got called in to explain that to my girls.
Chris had the birds and the bees conversation with
you. Want to come in and have the birds and the bees conversation with my girls?
I have a 25-year-old daughter. Yes, absolutely. The birds and the bees, they for
awesome.
Real. And,
I'm free on
and the bees sting.
Yes, they do.
And it, okay.
And they don't die after they sting.
Thank you. Gray's got one right now. He's trying to raise up the right way.
Awesome. I got a slot open on Friday. I'm gonna slide you right in there.
No problem.
All right, sticking with the matchup between two of Greg's former teams, the Packers and the Vikings, Aaron Rodgers got the win and possibly the loss on Sunday. An absolutely heroic effort coming back from what Rodgers, well, what we now know is he had a sprained knee to mount the most improbable of comebacks against the Bears. That was the win. But at what cost, as we still don't know if he can play this week against the Vikings? Rodgers didn't practice, but he did meet with the media.
I mean, I want to play, obviously, but just taking it one day at a time, see how it feels tomorrow, and, see how it feels Friday, Saturday, and then hopefully ready to go Sunday.
All right, Greg, if Rodgers does play, obviously we're not sure yet, but if he does, what's going to be the biggest key for him going up against this Vikings defense, a stingy Vikings defense?
His mobility. His mobility. When you look at this Vikings defense, obviously, number one, Aaron Rodgers wants to play.
Do you think he's going to play, though?
I think he's going to play. I definitely think he's going to play. I know a lot of people will look at, well, we have so much of the season left to think about. And I get that, but when you think about how he went out last year, it was against this Vikings defense, and then they skid after he got out. So, but the unique thing about the Vikings defense and the talent that Aaron provides that almost no other quarterback can is his ability to get better when he's outside the pocket and he extends the plays. Well, if he can't do that, he's playing right into the hands of the Minnesota Vikings because their defensive scheme is we want to keep him in the pocket. A lot of teams try to do it. The Vikings tend to do it better than most.
They got the personnel.
They have the personnel to get it done. You have Everson Griffin on one end. You got Hunter on the other. And then you got Linville Joseph and Richardson in the middle that can force pressure up the middle, keep him in that pocket, collapse the pocket. But then you got two guys who can run with Aaron Rodgers on the outside that can keep him in contained.
Is that Vikings defense also? We know they're a good defense. But is one of their trademarks is discipline? Is that another reason why they can?
They're a very disciplined defensive team. When you look at Mike Zimmer and what he brings to the table, he demands a lot of everyone, not just his starters, because you see them rotating. Everson Griffin was mic'd up last week, and he comes off the field, and he's running, and he says, man, this rotation is awesome. If we can do this all year. They stay fresh, but he demands the same out of Everson Griffin as he does the fourth and fifth and sixth rotation of man. And so in his secondary, they're very disciplined. You don't see this defensive team getting a lot of penalties, making a lot of forced errors on themselves, shooting themselves.
And don't give up a lot of big plays.
And they do not give up big plays, something that the Packers thrive off when Aaron is outside of the pocket.
And I think – I'm sorry to interrupt. Everyone, I think, if you think about Sunday night's game, the first image that comes to mind is the pass to Geronimo Allison. But the play that won the game was a short pass where Randall Cobb, you pointed this out earlier, see, I think it's a great point. Nobody could tackle him.
No, you got to get him on the ground.
And that Vikings defense tackles well. They have, I think, the best safety in football in Harrison Smith. And so, like, they've got the personnel to – it is, I think – the worst team in the NFC, and maybe the worst team in the NFL, it's them or the Jags, to have a quarterback compromised against. To have a quarterback who relies on his mobility the way Aaron does to not be mobile. If he could not have gotten away with what he did against Sunday against this team. As good as the Bears defense is with Khalil Mack and as good as they were last year, an underrated defense, it helped that Mack wasn't a huge part of the second half because you don't have a pitch count, but it also helped that the Bears don't have the D-line the Vikings do. And so you saw Rodgers dragging his leg.
The Bears don't have the secondary the Vikings
do. It's a great point. They got a great linebacking core that got even better with Mack, but they don't have the personnel. Like, it's a danger. Football's dangerous no matter what. It is particularly dangerous to be playing this team when you're not at 100%.
Okay, forgive me for stating the obvious, but on behalf of people that worry 80% of their day, I don't want to put Aaron Rodgers out there to face this defense. I just don't. If it's week two and after what happened last year, what would you say to Packer fans?
The mentality of football players is Aaron Rodgers going to play in this football game, and that rivalry has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. I would play in the game. The worst time, the time that I jeopardized my health more to play in a game, it was against the Packers, to play against the Packers. And Tyrone Williams hit me early in the game, and I told the coaching staff, get me out of here because I can't protect myself.
You were hurt, people should know, before the game. Didn't hurt you. You were hurt the week before.
In Kansas City, on that raggedy field they have in Kansas City where the grass don't grow and everything, Nick Wright and everything.
With the weird fans.
And so if that was a game – if that was a – you guys played Kansas City that year, so that means you're playing the AFC West. If the next game was against then San Diego Chargers, would you have played?
Nope. And I had a long streak. I wanted to keep it going, but no. I wanted to play in that game because it is the Packers. When we look at our schedule and it comes out, man, you're looking for when I'm playing the Packers. I'm looking for when I'm playing the Packers, when I'm playing the Bears, and I look to see what month it's in. Do I have to go there in December? Those are the games that you have to win, and those are the things that get players out there. The thing that we haven't talked about, you guys just mentioned at the end, what's the difference between the Bears and the Vikings defense? Let's just talk about their secondary. When they go nickel, they drafted Mike Hughes, first round out of UCF. Last week had a pick six against Jimmy G.
It
sitting
changed
there in
the game.
Zone.
Turned the game.
Changed the game. All right. Xavier Rhodes, first round pick. Harrison Smith, best safety, first round pick. Trey Waynes, Michigan State, playing in the slot, first round pick. They got the – now, people talk about the Rams. They got all the big names. But the Vikings have more B-rated players than anyone in the league, them in Philadelphia. That's one of the reasons why they're so good.
Well, let me ask you guys both this. We know Favre would have played because Favre always played. We heard Aaron say after the game.
Yes.
He referenced Brett Favre. And so how much – maybe it sounds silly, but how much of that factors into his decision?
Let's not forget that. Let's not forget the man who started that, Bart Starr. There's pressure on everyone that plays quarterback in Green Bay. Aaron feels that pressure, Greg.
Yes, but to your point, when you're sitting behind a Brett Favre who – number one, was a great player, but we know him to be Iron Man. He played through anything. Well, Aaron Rodgers has been hurt, so he's not Iron Man, but his ability to come back from injury is pretty impressive at the quarterbacking position. We thought he was through last year with that collarbone injury. He came back and he tried to play, and if had they won against Carolina, maybe we would have saw him more. So him playing through injury and coming back and showing the resilience, that's kind of his trademark. So to be out there, to your point, it's a rivalry game. He's playing against a team that knocked him out. And if he doesn't play, his team has no chance. I don't see Aaron Rodgers not stepping on the field on Sunday.
Can I ask you a quick question, C? What can you do to protect him? What can the Packers do game plan-wise if he's out there not at 100%? Because they can't run the football.
I'm going to tell you what you do. You tell Bulaga, you tell every single last one of these guys on this offensive line, don't let him get touched. That is all you can really do. And the rest is up to them. This defensive front is so good. It is on you now. You know you're putting your quarterback in harm's. Everyone knows if he goes out there, he's at risk.
Yes.
To get hurt, to get re-injured.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to that offensive line to not allow their quarterback to get touched.
All three of you think he's playing on Sunday?
I do.
Vegas is skeptical, so I'm skeptical. I'm going with the folks in Vegas.
One word, one word.
He played for both teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right? Yeah, he's playing.
I mean, we got 30 years of playing.
Okay.
So Vegas. Hey.
Vegas.
Hey, what about Vegas?
I think Vegas played in the league.
Yeah, Vegas played. No, right. They know more about football than we do.
I just said I'm skeptical.
I
did that yesterday. He had a heart attack. Today he's like, that was great. I like
it. Oh, my gosh.
Greg, thank you so much.
Jealousy's bleeding out your ears. I like him more than I like you.
Drinking.
I don't know why. When are you going to get this? I love you. I like him more.
Got it. Why is John Gruden ripping Derek Carr? That's next on First Things First. My feelings are hurt. Time to check in on the Raiders. Tough loss to the Rams last week. Defense was shaky. Offense was shaky. And that pretty much sums it up. Derek Carr had three picks. Many wondering why he didn't get the ball to Amari Cooper more. Cooper finished with just one catch for 9 yards. Well, apparently Gruden was wondering the same thing.
If we had more first downs in the second half, had more time of possession, perhaps we would have seen more Cooper. But you look at the film, we had him open, wide open, deep. We didn't go there. He was open a couple times, and for whatever reason, we didn't go that route. But, yeah, we want to get him going, and that's easier said than done now.
Huh. That's interesting. What'd you make of what Gruden said?
Oh, we had him wide open, deep a couple times. For whatever reason, we didn't go there. Watch this story, America. I know John Gruden said Derek Carr is the most talented quarterback he's ever had, but everything they've done this offseason starts to make a lot more sense if you look at it from the perspective of Gruden doesn't think they have their quarterback. If you operate from the perspective of Gruden thinks the reason we're in full rebuild, the reason we need extra first-round picks is because we're going to be in the quarterback drafting business soon, then all of a sudden his year doesn't seem so crazy. Then all of a sudden the moves he's made doesn't seem so bizarre. And him, for no reason, publicly taking a shot at Derek Carr right there, when he...
Oh, you believe he took a shot at him?
Yes. Yeah, I think... when you say, for whatever reason, we didn't go to him, The only reason you wouldn't go to him is because the quarterback chose not to. Do you read that a different way?
No, you're reading it right. I was just trying to make sure you put a little extra emphasis.
Okay,
on
yes.
Because there's a couple reasons why a coach talks about a wide receiver. The thing, I've had this said about me. There were games I didn't have big games. They'd ask Dennis Green, well, what happened? And if Dennis is trying to protect me, he's going to say Chris was open a few times. We just couldn't get in the ball. We couldn't generate enough offense, didn't get enough first downs. That's the typical coach speak, what they do. But if he would have said Brian Billick more so, because he's calling the plays, I had him open. That means I called the right play to get the guy open. I wanted to be open. But the guy pulling the trigger didn't see it that way. I don't know why we didn't get it to him. The only reason why we couldn't get it to either, he can say we had pressure, so that would be the offensive line's fault, or he could say the guy that's pulling the trigger, he didn't throw it to the place I told him to throw the ball to. John don't have to do this, especially with his 10 years in the media, all right? We can't use that as an excuse that we don't know the messaging point. All right? You try to take care of all your players, and people don't like Belichick, but the reason why he does that is he never says anything negative about any of his players. That's the agreement that the coaches have with the players. I'm never going to talk bad to you in the media. You know how I'm going to talk bad to you? I'm going to come into your office. I'm going to sit down with you, and I'm going to tell you.
Or in the film room. Yeah, we all see it.
That's the office.
Yep, exactly right.
You're not going to do it in a press conference. So John is missing out on some of the things that he knows as a head coach, and he definitely knows from a media standpoint that this is not the right way to go.
Or he's not missing out on it at all. And he knows the power of the media, and he knows the ability to script a narrative.
He's definitely trying to use the media with the Khalil Mack.
Absolutely.
Saying the player don't want to be here.
And if I was a man on an island this offseason saying, I don't think Derek Carr's that good. And if Gruden is trying to shift the discussion to maybe Derek Carr isn't that good. And by the way, people watching that don't know his contract situation, yeah, he signed that huge deal. Man, after this year, they can get out of that deal for $7 million cap hit. $7 million after this year.
Wow.
The year after that,
I didn't know
five.
That.
Right. Most people didn't because you heard 5 years, 125, $40 million guaranteed at signing. All that guaranteed money except for $7 million paid out before the end of this season. So I'm just saying, why would you trade away Khalil Mack? Why would you make the moves you've made? Why would you not look at the 2016 season and say, we can get back to that? Well, if you're focused on 2020, when you've got a 10-year contract, so you can focus on whenever you want, that's when you move to a new stadium. If you think we're going to be on a new quarterback by then, and I need extra draft picks to make sure we can get the quarterback I want, then all of a sudden, it starts snapping into focus. And then when you look at his history, who's Gruden won with? Oh, he's won with Rich Gannon. He's won with Brad Johnson. Who has he never won with? A young quarterback. So there's a lot of things here that make more sense if you operate from the perspective of he's not as high on Derek Carr as we think.
And also, people think John Gruden is something else, all right? Because what they've seen from John Gruden is John Gruden, the announcer. So what they've also seen is John Gruden with the quarterback series. People give John Gruden credit for a lot of quarterback play. Besides Rich Gannon, y'all tell me someone he improved. You tell me someone where their offense lit it up. John Gruden has always had quarterback issues except the year that he was with Rich Gannon. And also he had two Hall of Fame wide receivers.
He had Tim Brown and Jerry Rice, and Jerry Rice at that point was still amazing. People forget that Jerry Rice as a Raider wasn't always the cornrows start of the back of his head, Jerry. It was.
Jerry had a spectacular year that year with John Gruden. So this quarterback guru thing, don't know if that's all accurate. And I believe there could be something as far as in 2020, I can get a guy, and when I go to Vegas, it would be the guy that I pick compared to the guy I inherited.
you know, Gruden said a lot when he signed this deal, this 10-year, $100 million deal. And one of the things I think we all remember was how much love he threw towards Derek Carr. This is one of the reasons I'm coming back into the game. This is the talent that I want to build my, like, the next coming of my career around. You know, this is the guy that's going to take us and turn us into a winning organization. I mean, there was a lot that he put into Derek Carr, and you wonder now whether that was all part of
I don't think it was premeditated. I think that he was watching the game as an announcer, as a guy that has the Raiders a couple times a year, as a guy that saw that Derek Carr in year three almost won league MVP, and a guy that also thought maybe more highly of him than he did once he had an offseason with him.
He fell in love with his arm. That's what he did. Now it's the quarterback I'm dealing with, and maybe I'm not going to overreact. But it's only one game. Maybe I'm not in love with the quarterback. Does Carr have a special arm? Yes. But it's still to be determined what kind of quarterback he's going to be. He had one great year. So is he going to be a great football player? Or is he going to be a guy who played football, who had the great talent, the great attributes of a very, very strong arm?
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, how big of a deal is Big Ben's injured elbow? Next on First Things First. It is now time for stories to start your morning. Couldn't come fast enough. Former MVP Russell Westbrook underwent arthroscopic surgery on his right knee. He will most likely miss the entire preseason. It is on the board he could miss OKC's first few regular season games. Nick, how big of a deal is this?
I hope it's not a big deal, but I worry that it is. He turns 30 in November. This is his fourth surgery on the same knee. And for a guy who, more than any great player in the league, relies on his explosiveness and athleticism, this concerns me. And I know the timing of it concerns you, C.
So close to training camp, I know one of two things happened. Either he thought that he could rehab it and rest it and it'd be healthy, or he recently re-injured it because it's a knee that he's had previous procedures on before. It's not good for a guy with his mentality. I hope he takes the right time. And I hope the organization, OKC, intervenes because they do have a good point guard who they can play and be able to remove that burden from him. It's not about record this year. We need Russell healthy the second half of the season.
If people don't know, they traded for Dennis Schroeder this offseason in the Melo trade, so they have a legitimate backup.
All right, moving on to Thursday Night Football tonight on NFL Network. Ravens and Bengals. Cincy topped the Colts in week one. And Joe Flacco and Baltimore put up 47 on Buffalo. See, what are you looking for in this matchup?
A divisional game. These are two teams that don't like each other. Man, so a lot of little fisticuffs and a lot of little things happen during this game. Joe Flacco, I believe, plays his best football when he's either playing for a contract or there's pressure on him. Lamar Jackson being drafted in the first round, that's pressure. His other big season that he had when he was playing for a contract and he led them all the way with the Denver Mile High Miracle and everything, that's the best football I've seen Joe Flacco play.
I'm interested in this on both sides. On the Baltimore side, they were in the playoffs with 30 seconds left in last regular season. What happened? Andy Dalton connects for that touchdown. That's why he's a hero in Buffalo. Baltimore goes home. Buffalo goes to the playoffs. But in week one, man, A.J. Green looked awesome. And I'm excited to see if A.J. Green can continue that in week two of the season against a much better defense than the Colts have, against a much better secondary than the
Baltimore Colts have. Does have a good defense.
They have an excellent defense, absolutely.
All right, moving on, guys. The Nathan Peterman era is over in Buffalo again, at least for now. Bills announced that rookie Josh Allen will start Sunday against the Chargers. And in this video of him literally just throwing a ball, and we don't even know who he's throwing to, he looks amazing. Nick, was this the right move by Buffalo?
I actually don't think it was, because I think Josh Allen's future is more important than this game or even this season. We thought he was the quarterback least ready to play, and for him to be the second of the rookies to play and for him to be doing it against a Chargers defense because you have no other options, that's a terrible organizational failure, and I don't think it's fair to the player.
Well, it might not be fair to the player, but to the other 52 guys on the roster who they have to practice this week and they have to put in a game plan. It's better for them from their psyche to know that Peterman is not playing. Coaches tell you all the time, whoever has the football, you're responsible for it. And when you start getting careless with the football, you're not helping your team. You can't put Peterman there throwing all those interceptions. It's about this week. This is not about a franchise's direction. Sean McDermott is trying to, how do we win this week? How do I keep my guys engaged? Let me put the rookie in there for this week. All right? And it could be for next week. But he needs to go week to week with their quarterback situation because neither of the quarterbacks are ready.
All right. The Eagles will start Nick Foles when they head to Tampa on Sunday. Carson Wentz still hasn't been cleared for contact but continues to take part in team drills. Doug Peterson says Wentz is trending in the right direction. Chris, what is the key for Foles to keep the momentum going against Tampa Bay this weekend?
Well, for one, to get some momentum, you got to create some momentum. So he's not going into this game with no momentum. All right? Just like he was before they went to the NFC Championship. He was not playing good football. He was playing against a great defense. And what is he going to do? Is he going to be able to complete the ball down the field? Is he going to be able to – how many yards his completion rate? How many short passes he going to have? How many intermediate? But more importantly, can he get the ball deep to hurt the Vikings defense? He did that in the Vikings game, did that in the Super Bowl. I believe they had to go back to the RPO. The run-pass option, because that's where he was successful. What they don't have is Alshon Jeffrey running those slants and those digs on those RPOs after the fake for those easy throws. So for me, if I'm Doug, I go out and get him some completions early so that he gets confidence, so you can create some momentum so that the other guys and other wide receivers feel like he's going to be able to distribute the ball to them. But the first quarter of this game, the first couple series in this game, they're very important for Nick Foles.
And this is a good team for him to be going up against. I understand Tampa was the surprise of week one. They scored 48 on New Orleans. They gave up 40. That Tampa defense did not play well against the Saints. So if you're Nick Foles, this is the worst defense he will have played in take out the preseason since he became the starting quarterback for the Eagles late in last season. He played good defense in Atlanta, great defense in the Vikings. I think in that regard, this plays well for him.
It plays well, and also Vernon Hargraves, their best cover guy, put on injured reserve, tore his labrum in the game. Brent Grimes didn't play, their other cornerback. He was not healthy in week number one. So if you're talking about how do you get well, man, you need to see Tampa Bay's defense come to see you. So, yeah, that is a huge advantage in Nick Foles' favor.
Tampa was pretty successful last week, put up a lot of points. We don't know Ryan Fitzpatrick could do it again, but do you want to see Nick Foles come out?
They gave up 40, though.
But they did.
So here's the thing. I'm not worried about Philly's defense at all. Let me put it like this. If in week one Foles had played great, and the Philly defense had given them 35 to Atlanta, but Philly had won. Then I look at this game differently. I'm like, oh, Philly's defense doesn't look the same as last year.
Sure.
You're playing a team that scored 48. Fitzpatrick's hot. But I think the Philly defense is consistent week in, week out. So I'm more looking at it as Philly offense versus Tampa defense. And I've seen Fitzpatrick on that side of the ball too often after a great game, because he's had a few of these monster games. Some of them led to pretty decent contracts. He gets back to being Ryan Fitzpatrick pretty shortly there.
Also, the Saints defense was a little shaky.
It was terrible.
Well.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Some would say Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger had a bad week. 5 turnovers and a tie with the Browns. Some would be right. Now he's dealing with an elbow injury that kept him out of practice on Wednesday, but he still expects to play Sunday against the Chiefs in a much anticipated matchup. Nick, these are your Kansas City Chiefs. Mm-hmm. What does Big Ben have to do better to keep pace with this Chiefs offense?
Well, I would say have 4 fewer turnovers. That'd be a good start. I'll let you have one, give you credit for one. But obviously, the number one thing, and everyone's going to say this, it's not a very nuanced point, don't turn the ball over. But as someone who does still root for the Kansas City Chiefs, this is a scary game. Phillip Rivers lit this Chiefs team up. He threw for 424, and there were about 100 yards of drops in there. He could have had 500 yards passing in this game. There were easy plays dropped. Melvin Gordon combined for 160 yards, 100 plus in the air as a receiver out of the backfield. We saw James Conner all of a sudden be a legitimate pass catcher this past week for Pittsburgh. Like, this is a game where the over-under started at 51. It's already ticked up to 53. This is going to be who can score more. Like, I don't think the Chiefs have any shot at slowing down the Steelers. Period, point blank. I don't expect Eric Berry to play. They didn't get a pass rush against the Chargers. I don't think they can slow down the Steelers. The question is, can the Steelers slow down the Kansas City offense? If they can, then the Steelers should win this football game.
For Big Ben, the key, I believe, is Antonio Brown. I believe he can be dominant in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if he had 150, 175 yards. In last week's game, I didn't see the game. But Nick gave me the preview because I was like, where is Juju in this game? Nick was like, Juju played. He did his thing.
100 yards.
But when you have this type of offense, three receivers, you got to be able to have two of those receivers have big games. And they didn't do that. Moss and I, we said, Moss, Jake Reed, myself, we'd be like, man, two of us got to play big today. Now, that didn't give the other guy another excuse. But when Pittsburgh has that, that's when they're really, really special. We saw last year, A.B. having a big game. And then here, man, who is Juju? Man, Juju Schuster. Then he emerged in there. When they don't have that, you can keep them around 24 points. But in this game, I think they're going to need 30 to be able to win.
And the Kansas City Chiefs, since Andy Reid's gotten there, no team has beaten them like the Steelers. The Chiefs have a winning record against almost every team they've played since Andy Reid got there, as long as they've played them at least three times. Steelers, they're 1-4. They have a terrible playoff loss to the Steelers where the Chiefs scored two touchdowns, the Steelers scored zero touchdowns, and the Chiefs still lost this game. And the Chiefs have not won a game in Pittsburgh since 1986. Like, this is an organization that's always beaten up the Chiefs. And even you might say, what does it matter what happened in the 80s? Fine. In the last 4 years, the Steelers are 4-1 against Kansas City. It's been a bad matchup for Kansas City ever since Andy Reid's been there.
It's worth a mention that Le'Veon Bell's been taken off the depth chart. So it is a slightly different team that is coming in. Maybe not least slight less firepower just because AB and Juju have been playing so well. But does it change what the Chiefs' defense does at all?
I think you change because you know they're not going to move the running back out into space and you're concerned about the matchup. So, yes, that's something you don't have to. But the Chiefs, man, their secondary, they got huge question marks as far as their secondary. So they're limited in the amount of coverages and the amount of man-to-man that they want to play against the Steelers offense.
Man, the Chiefs had problems at corner last year, and last year Marcus Peters was on the team. They now don't have Marcus Peters on the team. They have even more problems. Mike Williams, guy that was had a disappointing rookie year, was a star player in college. His first game this season, 5 for 80 yards, and he didn't actually get a score. Keenan Allen had a 100-yard game and a score. The Chargers have weapons, right? And they took advantage of the Chiefs in the with those weapons. The Steelers have better weapons. Antonio Brown is the most consistent receiver in the league, and a lot of people think the best receiver in the league. The Chiefs are going to have to score 30, at least 31 points to win this football game, period, point blank. And I'm as high on Mahomes as anybody possibly can be, and I think the Chiefs can score. I think the Chiefs can move the football, but this is, man, it's tough now. And Mahomes is not going to have 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions very often this year. I expect this year he'd have a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, but I thought he would probably finish the season with 15, 16 picks because that's the knock on him, especially with how many deep shots he takes. They won that game against the Chargers playing a clean football game. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of real question marks for the Kansas City Chiefs going into this game against this team.
Are you as high on Patrick Mahomes, especially going up against the Steelers defense?
I like Pat Mahomes. I believe he has rare arm talent. I like the marriage between him and Andy Reid. I believe they got the skill guys around him. I believe these skill guys might be the best skill guys he'll play with his whole career. I told Dante Culpepper that early in his career, he was playing me, Robert Smith, Jake Reed, and Randy Moss. Man, he's going to best say, I looked at me, oh, no, we're going to, okay. Look back on his career, never happened again. So take advantage of it. Pittsburgh's a tough place to play, and you got to watch out for the Watt brother, the best one. That's JJ's brother. He's better than JJ right now. 3 sacks in his first week. Yeah.
TJ had 3 sacks and the blocked, 4 sacks actually, 3 tackles for a loss to go along with it, and the blocked field goal that saved the game. They'd be 0-1 instead of 0-0-1. The point you made real quick, C, about Pat Mahomes taking advantage of this, I don't think it can be discounted. Like, we don't know how long. I have a feeling at some point Tyreek Hill, something's going to happen where the league figures out a way to slow him down because we've never seen a player score 50-yard touchdowns at this clip that he has. He already has tied for the league most in the first 35 games of a career, and he's only played 33, along with Gale Sayers and Devin Hester. Like, Kelsey is in his prime. Kareem Hunt hasn't been beat up by the league yet. They just brought in Sammy Watkins. Like, this could be, likely will be, the best weapons Mahomes has, no matter how long he plays.
How can I be as high as him?
I was just going to say, it's fun when Nick gets excited.
I'm excited, man. I will be excited until some weekend in January.
I was just going to say, until
January. Where the Chiefs find some historic way to lose. How about a 20-point lead to Tennessee at home? You want to lose that way? I told you, lost a playoff game where they scored touchdowns, the other team didn't. How about a game where you never
punt? Period.
How about a game where you missed three field goals?
Coming up, Rob Gronkowski responds to Jalen Ramsey's trash talk.
Trash talk. How about a game where you're beating Andrew Luck by 28 points? He fumbles the ball to himself. Last year against the Titans, Mariota threw a touchdown to himself.
Back here on First Things First, Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott is here. Always a fun time.
It's always a party.
Welcome.
Always a party. You good?
I love that fuchsia right there.
Thank you very much.
He just called it high pink. That's fuchsia.
Exactly. Just, you ain't even got in the seat.
And you shots at him instead of me.
I like
compliment the co-host.
Yeah, thank you.
But this dude over here don't know.
He don't know anything.
Exactly.
It's my show, man.
We'll talk some football. What everybody knows about. The Patriots are in Jacksonville Sunday, not only an AFC Championship rematch, but the highly anticipated meeting between big talker Jalen Ramsey and big dude Rob Gronkowski. Remember, the all-pro corner said that anytime Gronk has been matched up with a corner, he's had a very bad game, and that corner has had a very good game? Well, Gronk was asked about those comments yesterday.
That's how he feels. That's how he feels. I mean, it's a big game this Sunday. We're playing them. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to have opportunities to go versus him. I'm sure he's going to have opportunities to go versus me. So I'm just preparing like I always prepare. I got to just do my job out on the field and just worry about that. There can always be talking, going back and forth, tempers getting heated up and everything. You just got to keep your cool. And, I mean, I don't see any benefit to get a 15-yard penalty out on the field because you lose your cool. And so you just got to keep your cool and keep your head on straight.
All right, Bart, sound advice. What should the Jags do to slow down Gronk? And is that going to come down to Jalen Ramsey?
I think it comes down to Jalen Ramsey in the red zone. I wouldn't get in the pattern of matching Ramsey up with him in the field because there's certain things that Bill Belichick would do. And I talked to you last time I was here about what he'll do. He'll put him in a box and make Jalen Ramsey have to come in a box and play and have linebacker type of eyes. And, you know, you saw last week with the New York Giants, they put Beckham in the backfield, which brings him in a box. And now he doesn't have those type of eyes. So I wouldn't match him up per se. What I would do is I would take another corner, maybe DJ Hayden, bring him in, let him jam him and give him help over the top. Because really what we used to do, we would take either Jason Taylor, and no matter what they'll do, because their counter is going to be take Gronk and split him out. But what you do is you take your defensive lineman who can physically disrupt him, hit him, and then it turns into a stunt into the line. So that's usually a concept that we did all the time, no matter what, because you feel like you can stop the Patriots' run game with your defensive line with a 7-to-6-man box.
So explain to the audience the downside of having Jalen just cover him every play. If you're watching and saying, man, the Pats, no Edelman, Cooks is gone, Amendola is gone, Deion Lewis is gone, Gronk was the game breaker in the Pats week one game against Houston, Jalen's their best player, you're saying just have him on him in the red zone. Yeah. Why would you not have him on in every play?
Because the Patriots will kill you with 1,000 paper cuts, right? It's death by 1,000 paper cuts. They will dink and dunk you all the way down the field, and you're taking your best player, and then now Boye's exposed, or now now Church is exposed, or Gibson is exposed. You want to have your best player on their primary, on their primary target, and all the time that's not Gronk. Gronk is in line a lot, so if he's in line, that's going to bring you in a box, and now you got 260 pounds. Blocking you, and it's nothing you can do. It's nothing that Ramsey can do in a run game against Gronkowski. He's a tremendous blocker.
Do you remember when they put the defensive back on Gronk, I think, in the Colts game, and he said he threw him out the club?
Yeah.
Remember he blocked him out the back
21.
Of the end zone?
I'm sorry, you ain't 21.
Yeah, so I mean, I love your football knowledge, and every time you come in here, you teach us something. Now, as far as Jalen being in the box, I think what you're talking about as far as eye discipline is, if Jalen is Jenna and he's guarding Gronk, I'm the tight end. If Gronk blocks down,
yeah,
Bart, as a linebacker, is going to know, fill this hole.
Yeah, somebody's coming to somebody's.
What's Jalen going to do if he sees Gronk walk down?
Get hit in the back of the head.
Yeah, he's going to be watching.
He's going to get hit in the back of the head.
Right, and you bring him into all those interior linemen, so he's got to play a physical. I love the fact the red zone. I hadn't even thought of that, just isolating him in the red zone.
So because you know that fade is coming, and you need somebody that has the defense radius. We always talk about catch radius. You need somebody that has the defense radius and also the strength to anchor, because Gronk is going to bully you over and just do that back shoulder fade, and there's nothing you can do about it. But, you know, just another example, right? We had a lockdown corner. His name was Darrell Revis, had his own island, right? We lock him up against Wes Walker. You know what he did? He put Wes Walker in the backfield. Wes Walker ran through the B gap in between the guard and tackles and ran an out route. I had man-to-man on the running back. Me and Revis ran into each other because Revis didn't know he has to pass those routes. When you have crossing routes within the box and you got man-to-man coverage, linebackers would do what we call limbo or banjo. That means I take the first to my side, you take the first to your side. He would know that. He would lock down. He'll mess around and pick one of his own guys off. And Belichick would do that all day.
So, and when you're saying in that instance, Belichick had Welker.
Take your notes.
Okay, but Belichick.
I'm teaching right now.
Belichick had Welker do that, anticipating that that's exactly what would happen.
But because
that
we
you
knew
guys
it was
would get caught up in the wash with each other.
Well, we knew it was man-to-man coverage, right? And you know that by motion. And, you know, they'll have Grunt come, shift, motion, see if he's in man-to-man, and then figure things out. And also, Jalen Ramsey knows nothing about getting cracked back on. Or he
That's
doesn't know
the
anything.
Eye discipline.
Yeah, he
because
know
his eyes have seen a different set of football.
Right.
They see different than Bart has seen football.
His guy blocked down, then they pulled a tackle around, what we call a TE, or we call like a front side puller, and then now you got a 350-pound guy coming at you. What are you going to do? All he's going to do is cut him. And then it's going to make a short edge.
What I did find interesting about Gronk's comments, Jenna, when we played these earlier, you said, you know, he's very patriot-esque, is just not going to say anything. He did say one thing that was a little different. He called this a big game. And the Pats don't typically differentiate any game. Every game's the next game. But because this is the team that played them in the AFC Championship game, for Gronk, this is the team that concussed him, that knocked him out of the game.
Would have been ejection in this year.
In this, absolutely. Barry Church came down and hit him. And so, and Gronk also said another thing I find interesting. He said, you know, it makes no sense. Tempers get heated. We don't want to get a 15-yard penalty. Let's not forget that last year, Gronkowski against Tre'Davious White of the Buffalo Bills dropped a flying elbow on him.
Macho man.
Got suspended. Not only got, I don't think he got kicked out of that game, got a flag, but then got suspended for the next game. So there's a lot going on here for Gronk specifically. Jalen's talk trash. This team knocked him unconscious or gave him a concussion in the previous game. He knows the way they're going to try to defend him, and he knows that this was a game. The Jags should have won that AFC title game, by the way. The Jags had the Patriots on the ropes and let their...
We heard that.
That's a fair point. But it looked like they were in an advantageous position once Gronk went out of the game.
And to your point, as far as what Gronk said about this being a big game, New England's done this in certain times. They know who their competition is.
Yep.
Like, they know when the Dolphins are good enough. They know when the Jets are good enough. Oh, they looked down at Baltimore. When Baltimore, they knew who Baltimore was. And I believe that the style of Jacksonville is, and they will approach this just like they approached when you guys were in Baltimore. We might see these guys again. So I believe for New England, this is an important game for them.
They have to send a message. They have to put that, they have to plant that seed of doubt in their head that, listen, we have your number. And, you know, they'll have a totally different game plan than what they had against them. The thing about the Patriots is they're a specific opponent specific. They're going to pick out something that you do bad, and they're going to make you beat them that way.
And if the Pats start off the year with all the questions we had about their offensive line, with wins against Houston's front and Jacksonville's front, and then you've got, I think it's Miami and Detroit and Indy over your next 3 weeks. By then, you've got Edelman back. A lot of the concerns from the preseason have gone away.
See, but this is why it's different, because they're a four-man rush team, so now they're going to have more people in coverage. What you want to do against Tom Brady is you want to play man-to-man coverage and make him throw into tight windows. He doesn't like to throw into tight spots. And also, you got to take Malik Jackson. You got to take
Ngakoue.
Ngakoue is one, but you got to take Marshall Darius. You got to get into those A gaps and make Tom Brady move his feet. If you don't have him move his feet and you allow him to sit in the pocket, the outside rushes, it doesn't matter. He'll step up and step out. But if you get A gap pressure, he'll fold up and he'll start seeing it coming and he'll chuck and duck.
Bart, I'm always like, guys, we need more A-gap pressure. And they're like, oh, that's what you always say.
Fuchsia. That's what that is, Cece.
Fuchsia. Bart.
Teaching me about football, C about colors.
I can't spell it. I don't know if it's a silent P or F.
I wasn't even going to do that to you.
F-U-S-C-I-A.
But that's what the Google's for.
Take a break. Stick around, Bart. Coming up, Landon Collins is calling out Dak Prescott. That's next. First things first. Back here with Bart Scott, we're talking the Dallas Cowboys. Not the start they were looking for last week when they lost 16-8 to the Panthers. And after throwing for just 170 yards, a lot of people questioning how good Dak Prescott actually is. Giants All-Pro safety Landon Collins doesn't seem to be among them. He says the key to stopping Dallas is to make Dak beat you.
He's really got to focus on stopping Zeke, making sure that every run gap, every we plan out gap assignments, making sure we close the air out of their offensive running game. If we do that, put the ball into Dak hands, I mean, I think we have a better shot of winning.
All right, Bart, is Landon Collins right? Is this coming down to just putting the ball in Dak's hands, and that's your best shot at winning?
That's every defensive goal, is to make sure that you make an offense one-dimensional. Stopping Ezekiel Elliott, he's going to be motivated. You hear some of the comments from Jerry Jones about maybe potentially using Dak Prescott more as Cam Newton. What that says to me is maybe a little bit more read option, you know, some RPOs, things like that. What happens when you do RPOs or you involve your quarterback in the run game is that he's going to hold that backside defensive end because he's always a threat. When you're going against an Eli Manning, you're going against a non-mobile quarterback, then it's no threat because you know he's not going to run it. So that defensive end flattens down and he's a factor in the run game. But now with a player with the mobility and also the leg speed and the size of Dak, he's going to hold that backside defensive end. So now you can not only cut it out, Zeke could be able to cut it up because now you take the tackle instead of having that tackle blacking out. You essentially don't block the defensive end and get the tackle to really move the pile and work up to the linebacker. And the linebacker has to try and fall back and read the shoulders of the running back. But the running back's going to stay square and always eyeing that backside to be able to cut back. Jamal Lewis probably ran for almost 2,000 yards that year, basically off that same play with Jonathan Ogden, you know, washing down and getting up to the linebacker. And there's nothing he can do about it.
And I could see them doing that. The reason why, because it's a style that also Dak played in college and Zeke played in college. So the ball handling, as far as who's going to take it and when do I let it go, you make a great point. That cutback. So not only can he hit it front side and bounce it outside, but that cutback, which all great running backs, they have that vision to be able to see, it opens up that. But it also, you can dictate outside because we saw with Nick Foles, RPO, fake it in,
Jason Peters and that second level
either
boy.
Slant, because those linebackers are that dig, it makes football so much easier. So Jerry's saying an awful lot every week, but sometimes you can pick out little nuggets in there. Would you have to watch for the RPOs? They got to give Zeke the football, and they got to be able to create some space outside to make the game easier. Because, Nick, I think that you pointed out in the Carolina game, we know what the book on Dallas is now. It's not going to be 30% eight in the box. It's not going to be 40%.
All right, so Dak's rookie year, Zeke's rookie year. Cowboys face an extra man in the box 36% of the time, actually under the league average. Last year, it was 40% of the time, just above league average. But keep in mind, Zeke was out for six games. Against Carolina, it was 53% of the time. That's a laughable amount. What that is saying is we don't think you can beat us one-on-one. We do not think you can beat us through the air. And Carolina did it, probably not even need an extra man in the box because their D-line's so good and their linebackers are so good. They did it just because they could. They were going to totally eliminate the running game. And if we looked at what the Jags were able to do against the Giants defense, by the way, because the Giants defense played a good game. The Jags offense only scored 13 points. They got it. What are you laughing about?
You got some guys stealing on that offensive line for the New York Giants.
Well, so what the Jags were.
Give me the money.
On the other side of the football, though, the Jags ran the ball 28 times for 137 yards. So, like, the Jags were able to run the ball on this Giants defense. I know that
one of those. I'm sorry, not to cut
you off.
Bortles,
41 yards.
So
then it'd be 27 for 96.
This guy is like, Rayman.
And so come on, that's minus 41. That's not that tough of math. But regardless, point is like that. I think you go into the game saying this is a game where Zeke can have a monster game. I didn't think you did that against Carolina where he'd have a monster game, because I don't think anyone can have faith that Dak's gonna have a monster game. Dak, in the Cowboys' last 9 games, it's not only that Dak's had less than 200 yards passing, they've been held under 10 points 5 times in those 9 games. All of them coinciding with Dak having less than 200 yards passing. Like, their offense, they don't score enough points with just Zeke running the football.
And I think last year teams were still trying to figure it out. Well, maybe still that first-year guy. And this year it seems like teams know already, okay, we have a pretty good idea of who Dak is, and it seems to be like that's how they craft their game plan.
Well, I think they should use Dak a little bit more like Russell Wilson. You know, get him on the move, allow him to rehab for the field. You know, because I feel like they threw the whole playbook at him, and that's a mistake that most coordinators do because they feel like, okay, this is his sophomore year. He's heard this verbiage before. Let's throw it at him. I think you still should be spoon-feeding him now, especially now that he's moving on and transitioning away from Dez Bryant, away from his security blanket in Witten.
But they that's are the biggest spoon-feeding loss that he's him had. A little bit. Jerry Jones even came out and said, we're making this a Dak-friendly offense. We want this to be as comfortable for him as possible to give him a chance to succeed.
Well, for me, a Dak-friendly offense is RPOs. No different than how you use Nick Foles because now you're taking – You're really giving him his reads. You know, the reads are already predetermined by what's happening, spreading them out, using all 53, you know, yards of the field, the width-wise, and giving him the reads because now what happens is those linebackers step up, you pull it out, you throw it over their heads. If not, you take it, you run, you use your legs and be more. He has to use his legs more. And with black quarterbacks, they're really hesitant sometimes to be labeled as a mobile quarterback.
That's a real thing.
It's a real thing. They want to prove that they can beat you with their arm because it's almost saying, like, okay, you can't figure it out. You're not good enough. You're not playing the quarterback position the same way. So I feel like he's fighting that. He needs to go ahead and use his God-given ability as he learns how to play the game better from the pocket.
Because it is, while Dak is not the athlete, I know Jerry compared him to Cam. He's not close to the athlete Cam is. His career high in rushing shouldn't be 45 yards.
Right.
And that's what it is. But what we also, when we're talking about doing what Nick Foles, what they do for Nick Foles, why do they do that for Nick Foles? Because Nick Foles is a limited quarterback. So you have to manufacture reads for him. You have to give him his first read. You have to make it easy. And let's just look at, you're relatively new to our show. This is one of my favorite things. I'm going to do a blind reveal. Let's show Dak post-rookie season. So Dak last year and this year, those are his numbers. 63%, 205, 6.7 a pass, touchdown interception ratio. The guy on the right, better completion percentage, better yards per game, better yards per pass, better touchdown interception ratio. Show everybody who that guy is. That's Josh McCown.
Whoa.
You can't have that.
But you know what Josh
can't have that.
You know what Josh McCown has that Dak doesn't? That's a vertical receiver. Vertical receiver and Robbie Anderson, the guy that can win. Their games are more West Coast. Garrett's calling more of a West Coast, which is horizontal, get the ball in the hands of your receivers and let them do work afterwards. So he doesn't get those explosive plays because he has nobody that can win down the field. As good as Dez Bryant was at the 50-50 ball, he wasn't a blazer when he came in and he had lost a step. So now they went out and they got Hearns and they still have Williams.
They had a vertical receiver in Terrence Williams.
But you need one that can win, though.
Okay.
Like, it's good that he can run fast, but we need one that can win.
And I know they still have Terrence Williams. My point was Terrence Williams had good vertical receiving numbers until Dak took over as the quarterback.
Yes, and NFL defenses still had a lot of respect for Jason Witten and Dez Bryant. That's why we didn't see the numbers. So you can say what you want about Dez Bryant. Oh, he's this, that. NFL defense is like, listen, we're going to play a little cover too.
Yeah.
We ain't going to let him get started and have a big day. So the numbers are
still
not.
Out there, right?
Yeah, tweeting.
Yeah.
Tweeting. Him and Jerry, they went to the
Twitter thug.
Jay-Z. They went to Jay-Z concert. Beyonce concert together.
Man, let's not go to a concert. Give me a job, bro. What you talking about?
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.